Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, we're going to have Sarah Butler from Sarah Butler at Home. I think that's her latest book, content creator, food writer and home cook. And super value brand ambassador like yourself, Gaz. So you probably know Sarah quite well.
Yeah, in the last few years I've got to know Sarah quite well. We've done a good few demos together and a few other bits and pieces. She's a lovely, lovely girl and a very accomplished cook, and kind of curious to understand how she's at the getting into it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think she's taken the classical route like we've taken, where it's been college and then running restaurants. And
well, I couldn't believe it when I saw producer Aoife's notes saying she only started cooking when the pandemic hit, because I feel like I've been looking at her stuff for a lot longer.
One of the things I know when I was talking to her, she produces and edits and photographs and does all the books herself. I remember when she told me that, I was like, what, there isn't a big machine behind you? Because she's cracking out books like once a year.
Yeah, deadly. We'll have our dish of the week as always. Gareth is up this week, and our culinary conundrum, so don't go anywhere.
So up now we have a guest who I've been trying to get on for ages, but our diaries kept missing one another. Sarah Butler, a chef and friend and a co-worker with Super Value. So that's how kind of we met each other properly. So Sarah, you're very welcome onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
It's great to be up in the big city.
Well, no, you're up for a big event.
From the Wild West.
Exactly.
Yeah, we were taking a hand at Gareth there off air.
It's unbelievable. When
Sarah and I were talking farming and animals.
What was the...
Gareth was a bit lost.
I said a word out there. A grape. And I was like, what's a grape?
Yeah.
Turns out a grape is a pitchfork or something.
Yeah, it's similar. Well, there's extra prongs in it, yeah.
Extra prongs. Fork, which I never knew.
Gareth just thought cows were terrified of grapes.
Exactly. I'm sitting in the middle of Dublin feeling very out of place, when really it should be you guys starting out of place. Anyway, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Delighted to be here.
Give us a little bit of an overview of how you got into the world of cooking. And you've just put Gary and I to shame because you've whipped out 5 cookbooks. Yes,
yeah.
5 cookbooks.
We're cooking over 60 years professionally between us, and we don't have a book between the two of us. And Sarah's just plopped 5.
That's something you can do now together.
These are absolutely beautiful.
Tell us a little bit about how you get into the world of cooking. And
I never really got into it. I was always kind of in it. So my dad was a butcher, 4th generation. So there was always some sort of a cut of something thrown on the kitchen table at breakfast time. And we had a B&B growing up.
Okay.
So there was always food. Mom and dad, both great cooks, chefs. My grandmother lived next door. She was brilliant, very adventurous in the way she cooked, even back in the 70s, 80s. It was just always there. It was always food. You talk about what you were having for lunch at breakfast.
Yeah.
You talk about what dinner was at lunch. Now, it's gas because it's not like I was in the kitchen making, you know, in this lovely visualization that you'd have that I'm in the kitchen making bread with, like my parents. And there were 6 of us as well. You ran out of the kitchen because it was like, get out. There's 20 guests that need to be fed. You're not coming in here to make cookies like we do nowadays with our kids. So I suppose it was from learned watching. And, you know, I always say to people, you don't have to be cooking with your kids. They'll pick up what they see. They'll hear you. They'll, you know, I walked in one day, my daughter, she'd made pan fried chicken breast and some spuds and some veg. And she's there eating the chicken. I'm like, oh my God, where did that come from? Your father hardly made you that. And she said, I made it. So I immediately ran over to cut it open to see was it cooked in the middle. And she said, I used the thermometer, ma'am. I knew it had to be at 75. I was like, how did you know that? And she said, I had heard you saying it one day.
What age is she?
16 now.
That's cool.
This is about 2 years ago. So so watching, I think, is where you kind of learn a lot. So that was kind of it. And then went to college, couldn't wait to get into my own kitchen to be able to make things.
And what did you study in college?
I studied graphic design in Letterkenny for 4 years and I loved it.
It's my neck of the woods.
That is your neck
of the
woods.
You live up there.
Yeah.
Oh, not there.
Another hidden talent.
Yeah.
I lived there for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Love Donegal. Yeah.
Jesus, yeah, it's a good time.
Great spot.
Yeah.
So I used to batch cook. Gosh, even how geeky was I at like 19? I'd be batch cooking my dinners for the week and bring them back to college to have with my book.
And has the graphic design piece helped with the books?
It's helped with everything. And I think, like, if you're a creative person, food and design, it's all very visual. We eat with our eyes. But I mean, definitely, I was able to do all my own cookbooks, my own food photography. I hired a cover photographer and a proofreader, and I was able to do everything else outside.
So all the photographs in are
all
are
my own, yeah.
You actually physically take
the
photographs?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So then I had my contacts in the printers. They're all printed in Ireland. Layout, everything.
You do all of that yourself?
All of that, yeah. So I love that because it's bringing the two kind of things that I love together.
That's so cool. And is there, how did you find bringing the first book to market then if you hadn't got a...
Nervous wreck. It was really stressful because it was actually, I suppose, the big thing going from graphic designer. So I had my own graphic design business for 20 years, started doing signage, vehicle wraps, bigger kind of display signage. Right. Then adapted as we had the kids, you know, got into wedding stationery because it's easier, it's smaller, less physical, loving it. And then COVID came and the weddings were cancelled. So I would be a self-confessed workaholic.
Okay.
I love my work. And it's purely because I love what I do. I mean, I would do what I do 24 hours a day. You'd want to knock me over the head to just stop me. I always did. And then there was no work. And it was the first time in my life, because, I mean, we worked. My dad had a business. I worked. I used to walk from school to there. We had the B&B. I went to college. I worked in a solicitor's office in college and my hours off. And then it was straight into work. Didn't do the traveling thing. Straight cutting away to get working. So it was actually the first time in my life that I didn't work, and it was so strange
and difficult.
Very difficult. I found that really hard. I found it really hard to just accept that there's nothing we can do about this and we have no control. Yeah. Bit of control freak, can you tell? So I always cooked. I just thought everyone knew how to cook.
Right.
I was like, well, do you not know how to make a pavlova, and do you not know how to make a roast chicken dinner? But then it turns out people didn't. So I just had put a picture up of a meringue, actually a lemon meringue I made on my Instagram page for my wedding stationery, and everyone was like, in lockdown, making banana bread.
And what sort of an audience did you already have, like, for the wedding?
It would have been, yeah, kind of young couples.
But like, as far as a number kind of...
Oh, number, I think I had about maybe 3,000.
That's okay.
Yeah, so they all said, how did you make the meringue? Show us, we're all at home. And it's mad to look back on that very first video, like, I'm so nervous. So I kind of went from there, and I just do daily tips, like, you know, add some more milk and butter to your spuds and it makes them lovely and creamy, and, you know, make sure you season and make sure you taste, and here's a little, you know, put a bit of kitchen paper or tea towel in on top of your...
Magic word, taste.
Yeah, there you go.
It's incredible.
We're all in such a rush. Unbelievable. Like, slow down, lads, and just taste your food and sit down and eat it slowly.
And was there one particular thing that you done that really made
followers
jump?
No, I think it just was simple, normal stuff. People would ask me questions and I'd answer. I knew the answer to everything that could go wrong because it had gone wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Why did my cake sink? Why did this happen? Because it's happened to me. I'm not claiming to be an expert. I'm not trained. So I think I just connected with people on that normal level. And then the followers actually said, why don't you put your recipes into a book? And I was like, what? Then I thought I could actually do this. So yeah, it went from there. Obviously, nobody's going to tap me for publishing. They will now. They have done now, but not with small following, you know, an untrained girl in the west of Ireland. So I did it myself, and it went down so well.
And is there a temptation now to move to a publisher? Or?
No, because if they didn't want me then, I'll do it myself. I'm a bit like that, a bit of determination.
That's good.
And I'm able to do it. No, I like the creative control that you have. I think sometimes you can see books and I don't know, if they're very styled and similar.
Yeah. And how long then from the first video to the leap of faith in publishing the book? Because obviously, yeah, you're self-published, but you obviously have to invest.
Well, absolutely. You know. I think I had about 300 quid in my account. And I had a month's credit with my printers when I sent the first one off. And oh gosh, when you have, I think there was 2,000 books coming back on a pallet. And you have to sell them yourself.
Yeah.
It was high stress. It was probably one of the highest stresses. But you know, when you have to do something, you know, you do.
Yeah, and there's no better time to
find
a
way.
How were you selling them? A true directly from?
Oh, stop it. You've just brought all the awful memories back. And how naive we were. So the boxes landed and they went into the garage. And sure, we didn't think we'd sell 100. We were like, this is it now. For the rest of our lives, we have to sell all these books. Yeah. And sure, we did a pre-order. So just we were like, we'll do a pre-order and see how it goes. And sure, we sold 1,000 on the first night.
Well, books, that's incredible.
The books weren't even landed. And then we had to get them out. We got a courier company, like sustainability and all that, who were eco and it was all electrically. Anyways, there were pure dodges.
I was going to say, yeah, all the bollocks.
Yeah, yeah. Mary's book ended up in Carmel's bin and this lovely book never landed. This one was found in a bush. So it was an absolute disaster, but we got everybody sorted. So we self-dispatched for a while and then we found a courier company.
And was that through the post office? Or when you...
And post. Loved to see us coming every evening with boxes and boxes of books. Well, but it was juggling. The kids literally reared themselves. We used to roar from the garage door, "Are you all right?" As long as they shouted back, "Yeah," it's like they could have been in there doing
How many
anything.
Kids have you?
Two.
Yeah. When you said one of them there now is 16.
Yeah, so Grace is 16 and Thomas is coming on 14.
Oh, deadly.
Yeah, so they're a good age. Yeah, no, you wouldn't be surprised.
Well, they are now.
So yeah, but it kind of just went really well after that.
And now it's not all coming from the house.
No, no, we have a courier, a dispatch company. So basically, they pick them and send them out. So that takes a little bit of pressure off and allows you to have more time because it's all time.
Yeah.
When you're a mother as well.
And what's the magic time then, say, from one book and it all sort of starting to die down or whatever? Because you've got five already, is it, or six?
There's five there. So, yeah, I kind of start them maybe April. I have to go to print September to have them back for October ahead of Christmas. And then it's just mental. I mean, we didn't put our Christmas tree up until I think it was midnight on Christmas Eve. My son actually said, "Ma'am, are we putting a Christmas tree up?" Like, we have books to sell. You'll understand.
But stack the books there in a pyramid shape and try
exactly,
a few.
Like, yeah, there's your Christmas tree. So it's hell for leather then for obviously the Christmas rush and then up kind of up until the end of January.
And has your style of cookery changed?
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I love about the books is you can see that. And I always say to people when they ask me, what book should I start with? And I always say, start with book one, home cooking. And I know I call them book one, book two, because I've got better as time has gone on and I've learned different things. So, you know, definitely from learning from the likes of you and all the other lovely chefs that have helped me with my questions and shown me how to do things.
And in what way do you think it's changed? Like, do you think you're more conscious of presentation or are you more...
Well, I've always been conscious of presentation, but I suppose even more so, like I look back on some of the pictures in the first book and I'm like, oh God, I can't believe I put that in there. Why didn't you do it again and get a better light? But look, it was what it was. Flavours, a little bit more, you know, trying different things, trying different dishes, experimenting a little bit more, but also trying to keep it simple because I am the home cook for somebody at home who might have 20 minutes to make a dinner. They don't have all these ingredients, you know, and also if you have half a pepper and a couple of tomatoes and rasher left, you can also make this with it. Mm. But yeah, no, definitely my style has, I'd like to think, improved.
And are you more savoury or sweet, Sarah?
Savoury, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, because I'm looking at it, which normally, like, there's a wee mix, there's two desserts, there's no dessert in one of them or whatever, but when I flicked through it there, I was like, God, the one thing that struck me, and I wasn't expecting it, I don't know why or whatever, but it was, I was like, God, like, there's a lot more savoury here than what I was expecting. Because I think the easy thing, especially with books and that, is patisserie sales, bacon sales, you know, as you've probably learned over time. Like, everybody will take a pot shot at a recipe book for a dessert.
Who critiques them for you through the process?
Me.
I knew the answer to that, by the way.
Yeah, you're amazing.
I'm my
Look
own
in the
biggest.
Mirror.
Yeah, 100% me, you know. My husband will give his input.
So he's happy enough stuff.
He's all right. He's fed. He's all right.
Shoot days are good days.
But yeah, no, I will be fairly self-critical on things. But, you know, I have to let that go as well.
And with all the demo work that you do, like, so the TV work and the festivals now, do you always reach from recipes from the book? Or?
I do. Like, I have my own five copies and they're torn and ripped because, you know, you don't remember all the ingredients to things. And I do go back and go, oh, I forgot about that. So I would, even with the TV work, you know, I'll flick through because you're sending them on a couple of different options.
Yeah.
So I'll always flick through.
And which part of the world of cooking do you enjoy when it comes to that? Like, so as a... You know, do you like festivals? Do you like doing
I
TV
love
stuff?
The TV. I love the TV. I love the live element. I'm a bit of a I love fast cars. I like fast sports. I like been in a situation where I'm like, oh gosh, well, how did I get myself here? Like, it happens a lot. But I love that rush of can't run out the door now.
What was the first show you did today?
The first show was Virgin Media. And oh, poor Tommy Bo, like he was eating a raw chicken one day. The hob went off. It was an induction hob.
Ireland AM, was it?
I have horrors. Yeah, Ireland AM. The induction hob. Just, of course, I'm a pan shaker.
Right. Oh, no.
So yeah. It went off and he was eating it and I was trying to tell him with my eyes. The amount of people that messaged me going, Sarah, that chicken was raw.
But that's
what happens.
That's what cookery is.
Now, yesterday, like 3 minutes before we went live on the Today Show, I was making my pavlova and I was like,
here we go.
Everything done. Everything's in the little jars and the little dishes. And I came in and I was just getting the KitchenAid up and I was like, oh, the whisk. And it wasn't.
Wasn't
there.
You couldn't find it.
Days.
I was like, I'm going to have to twist this by hand. Yeah. We found an electric one. I was like, yeah. And yeah, it gets fluffier, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah you got to lie through your teeth all the time. Yeah. The very first day I did TV, and just as I'm doing the cookery slot, Jordan, the model or whatever at the time, I don't know what you call her now, but anyway, she rolled over and all I could see was her lips at the corner of my eye or whatever. But anyway, she's right there. I'm cooking this thing and my baby finger stuck to a copper pot. And I was just like, and you know, like the pain just goes right to your ankles. I was like, oh my God, don't drop an F-bomb, which is the first thing that usually comes to my mind. I'm finished on cooking this dish anyways. I moved on, and even before Mara walked away off stage, was a bubble appeared here, and I was like, Jesus Christ, it's nerve-wracking, you know. Yes, yeah. But stuff goes wrong. I think Garrow, God rest him, a buddy of ours, he died recently, but Jerry had a nightmare as well. One of the first times, I think maybe it might have been his only time to
really?
TV. I think he set something on fire and completely panicked. I'd have to go back now and see. I used to give him an off snagging about
it. That's cookery.
That's it. It happens.
And that was the end of him and TV. Just refused point blank. Oh, it'd be a mixture of not being invited back as well, I'd say, you know.
It's funny, I prefer live as well. I don't like
people don't make mistakes when it's live. I go mental because the odd time, like, you know, they might do a pre-record. Mm. Very rare out there, but obviously the Friday show today is a pre-record. And I find
it's harder.
People are making mistakes. They're not as clued in. You're there an hour longer than what you need to be.
Yeah.
When it's live, there's no messing.
There's no, people, you can't.
Yeah. People come in. Yeah, you can't.
You can't.
Yeah, everybody's tuned in, you know, but... Yeah, oh, that'll be a good book someday, actually, after all the years TV mishaps.
But they're so
the
chill, like, the crew are just like, it's fine, we'll figure it out.
There's a thing in TV, and sometimes it's not that they're glad when things go wrong, but it makes for TV.
It does, yeah.
You know, and it's real. So, with the competition that I'm involved in, we've been talking about broadcasting that forever, like, you know, but one of the things that stopped it, it's just the fact that it can never be, will you do that again? It can't be a MasterChef format because they're actually competing to win a competition. So if they make something and the cameraman misses it, or you just miss it, where you go, oh, stop, will you do that again? It can never be that.
Yeah.
So this year, actually, it's being filmed, but it's like flying the wall. So the camera crews will just be there watching what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the likes of MasterChef and all them, they actually really want things. I remember we had MasterChef in. I brought them, you know, the way they come into the restaurant, and we'd 60 booked for lunch, and these three come in, and the producers come in. Just put one of them on that section, one of them. Oh, it was grand, And service started, and there was a lad over on the sauce section, and I was like, said to one of my sous chefs, stand over there and don't let them sink.
Mm.
Just keep an eye on them. Anyway, service started and it was a roasted piece of sea bass with a bouillabaisse stew. Anyway, I says, look, let them sear off a couple of pieces of sea bass and then put the mussels and the clams into the bouillabaisse. And I says, I'll call for it and let them bring it over. Anyway, I called for the sauce and the sauce come over. And I knew the mussels and clams, they couldn't have been cooked.
Yeah.
I watched them throwing them in for boiling sauce and they just didn't have the experience. But the film crew were like, yes,
loved
done
it.
Something wrong, because they thought I was going to absolutely blow up, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, just put it back on the stove, bring it up to the boil. If it then doesn't open, but afterwards I was like, think it was the early days of the market. I was like, Jesus, they really want things to go wrong. But
oh, no, they
60
do.
Guests in the restaurant.
But sure, I'm filming the restaurant for 14 years.
Yeah, but that's the whole premise of that show, right?
They love disasters. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it took me a while. Like, I'm fucking cracking up, you know what I mean? Because the tastings go late when I'm on starter. So you're 8.5 hours getting set. The tasting's the last thing. And that's the one time we're allowed the opinion, as you know by now. But then the restaurant, so the tasting goes on too late, but the restaurant opens. So if that recording goes on and on and on and on, 5:30 still comes around. So 5:10, 5:15, tasting's over. There's a camera crew change. I've now 15 minutes to change 9 hours work. And that next thing you can just feel the camera crews are honing in. Whereas back in the first couple of years, you just go into chef mode, survival mode. But now you like you become aware then, like, oh, Jesus Christ, keep seeing footage of yourself going fucking mental. I'm like going, oh, no, you're not going to catch me out anymore. But it took years to learn, you know, to still give them enough, but not the full.
Yeah.
Not the full, you know.
Where do you see your career going? Are you going to just keep on with the books or is
that...
Is the design part of your...
It's hard to know because the whole thing just kind of came along and has just driven itself and opportunities arise and you just take them and go with it. So I love the TV. I really hope I keep getting that opportunity. I love that live element and I love the crack and I love meeting people.
And what does the summer look like now? Is the festival?
A couple of festivals. We've Taste Kong Food Festival, which is a really nice one. So a few festivals. Just take it handy.
But no book this year?
I don't think so. You know, I don't want to just...
You believe her?
No.
Yeah, but you got to... Sometimes you can do too many though. You got to keep people waiting.
Yeah, I think I need to change it up. I have a couple of ideas and I don't want to just do one for the sake of doing it. Right. So I think it's time to just take a little chill.
How often do you put recipes out on Instagram?
I try to put something up every day, but just for the algorithms now, only for that. But it's not that I'm cooking a recipe every day. I mean, you can have content. There's hundreds of videos that I have that you can put out there. Or even just, not even recipes. And it's so hard because, you know, you're losing them after 3 seconds and you've just spent 3 hours editing this voiceover and it, you know, cooking.
How did you, who brought you along? Was that all just for yourself as well?
Just kind of learned as I was going along. Now I would have done a little bit of editing in college, but yeah, it's mad, like the attention span is gone. So you really want your followers to love food and to be interested in what your video is about or you're just going to lose them. I mean, you see these videos, they're like 15 seconds and you're like, oh, I'm definitely going to make that, and then you make it and it doesn't work.
Right.
You know, I'm like, you know, you need that little bit of length to put the tips in, for people, because then people will come
back.
What's
the magic number on a reel? Or
on a reel, yeah. You try and keep it kind of 30 seconds,
yeah.
You know. But it's all about the hook. You have to have a hook at the beginning. Yeah. It's a little bit of sales and marketing in as well, which I love as well. Nearly did that as a career marketing. So you kind of have to watch till the end to show them the finished piece at the beginning. So they'll watch the end and, you know, keep an eye out for those top tips. Or does this happen to you? Keep watching and you'll find out.
Ventured into the world of TikTok as well, or is it just Instagram?
Oh, I have a TikTok account. My main problem is my phone is like maxed out on memory.
Right.
And they're a little bit, they're a little bit, you know, opinionated over on TikTok. More so, Instagram is lovely and nice and I'm not able for like any abuse at all. I'm crying in the bed or I'd be off up the road with a pitchfork to find them.
Or a grape.
Or a grape. I'm not able for it. Like, I don't know how people young in social media deal with it who do get a lot of grief. So I tend to like post something on TikTok and then delete the app and go back to Instagram. People will say, well, you know, you put yourself out there. Like, okay, does that allow you?
Yeah, but when
you
you're
to,
out there talking about food, I mean...
Well, in fairness, food people are... I'm very lucky, thank God, you know... foodies are sound. They're, you know, you'll have the odd one going, oh God, that's not the way to poach an egg. Yeah, in that case, you're like, All right, sound okay, off you yeah. go. You put your egg your way because whatever. But like when they do get, if they get personal on people, yeah. you know, you've seen it.
We've oh, but you see it now. Like any article, if you news article, you might see like anything from the end or whatever. And sometimes, you know, it'll show the beginning, few lines of comments, whatever. Some of the stuff yeah. that people say,
it's crazy.
Like, and their names are up yeah. there. You're just like, oh, Jesus.
Have you time
Christ,
to be at
like,
this?
What the fuck is yeah. wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. just try and keep it. I try and keep it all nice and nice and clean and above board, because you do tend to go, right, is that okay now? Is there anyone that can come out and say anything about this? Because I'm not interested in my day being ruined because someone decides to say something.
Yeah.
Like you do. I have to be very careful. If I was the real me, like Gareth, you know, it would be loads of crack. There'd be loads of giving out. But yeah.
And how do you find finding like new suppliers or new ingredients or... You know, do you use the festivals for that, or is that just literally from shopping? Or?
Yeah, I suppose. And a lot of stuff, you know, you see online and you're like, oh, I must try that. Or, you know, you might just come
Do you try and
something.
Find trends that go like viral?
I do, but, you know, I'm yet to find one really that's worth
the
hassle.
Cracked the cold.
No, I didn't go making the Dubai torture. Chocolate bar or anything, you know. But yeah.
It's probably like, hard not to get sucked into that kind of crack, isn't it?
You know, time is so tight. Yeah. You know, it's hard to get the time to do these things. So I try and focus on what will work and what yeah. will be beneficial to people. You know, you'll try the odd thing.
And do you try and answer a lot of the comments that you get?
I do. From? It's one thing I try to reply to everyone. You know, because, well, yeah, I do. I really
commitment.
Do. Because, you know, you might have somebody that's... A lot of people are struggling out there.
Right.
You know, you might get a message from someone to say, oh, look what I made, your recipe for my dad, and my mum has just passed away, and he loves them and he hadn't been eating. So, God, imagine missing that, and somebody to think, God, she didn't even reply to me. You know, so you get lovely messages. You get really nice messages from parents about kids who love to cook, and like just that the books are bringing them on, and just to build the confidence. People's confidence, I think, in cooking is a big thing. I think everyone has a book in them, but everyone has a cook in them. You know, you just have to have that confidence. So I do try to reply.
That's the biggest part of cookery is, you know, like you have to make mistakes to get better.
Of course.
Where I think a lot of people see a dish as you have to get it exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, many times someone said to you, oh, that bolognese sauce you made was lovely, but I'd know basil. And I'm like, what do you mean you know basil? You could have still made the sauce.
Yeah.
Oh, no, well, I didn't think I'd come. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. You do get that a lot. It's like, Sarah, I don't have any mushrooms.
Yeah. I'm like, but it's mad.
You can still make it if you're missing something.
Yeah.
Or, and it's just to teach people, you know, if I don't have this, what else can I use? The kids don't like mushrooms. I'm like, just leave the mushrooms out. Yeah. Shepherd's pie or whatever it is, beef bourguignon, just leave them out. Have like veg on the side that they do like. It's just the basic components of cooking. Once you have that right, you're grand.
Yeah, but that only comes, it's easy to say that when you're confident. Like that only comes in time.
Yeah, sure, aye. It's true. No matter what you're at, you know what I mean?
I remember being in college the first year in college, and I was terrified about having to plate up whatever I'd done, you know?
Mm.
And I was like, how do I get it to look chefy, you know? Yeah. And I wasn't thinking, like, I'm making stroganoff or whatever. I was like, no, you should be really focusing on what it tastes like. It's going to just go into a little bowl over there. But that part, I know with young chefs now, obviously.
But you would, like when you're young, you're obsessed with presentation.
Yeah, it's gas.
Yeah.
My husband hates it because I can't eat his dinner. I'm there taking pictures. He's like, I'm going to come back. My kids are like, man, blades.
Oh,
I'm
really?
Here with pulling spotlights out of the press.
When you go out, are you trying to pick a restaurant that's going to give you inspiration or...
Yeah, but I'm not. Like, people are like, oh gosh, you must be really difficult to cook for. Like, imagine having you over for dinner. Like, just give me a steak.
There's a line. Chef's
just keep
heat.
It simple. Yeah. I'm not. I'm
a fucking slice of toast.
Yeah.
I'd be grateful.
Beans and toast with melted cheese or a baked potato.
Easiest people in the world to please are chefs, you know.
And do you like the fine dining aspect? Do you like that style of restaurant?
I prefer more traditional.
I know the answer to that question.
I do. Give me a steak and a spud and veg and a nice homemade sauce. I like to know what I'm eating.
Right.
I like to know what I'm eating. I don't like eating something. I'm like, what's this now? You know, if I'm having
taste
a bit of fish.
The menus are not your thing. You don't like going in and just.
It's not that I don't like them. And I suppose it's an ignorance on my part because it's not really something I would have known a lot about. But I would rather go in and have a nice dinner with really good, like, local ingredients, freshly made. Then
no hero stuff.
A little bit of this and a little bit of that. I remember eating somewhere once, very fancy, and they came out with the Terrain.
Yeah.
It's like Mr. Bean trying to hide it in the bread rolls in my bag.
My wife was the same. If she sees the tureen, she'd be like, why is wrong? Which is like, why would you want to? And you're looking at me the way I look. I actually love the skill of making a tureen.
Yeah.
It's a it's something I would have learned very early on in my career. Yeah. And a tureen made well.
And that's it. And that's where I'm saying this is my level is here. Like, no, you guys are up here. So it's a total
ignorance.
If you
don't like that type of food, then it's like, yeah, of course.
Maybe
exactly.
I'll develop a flavour for it. I remember we went to France camping years and years ago before we ever got married. And we'd no money and we were in a camper van. We weren't even in a camper van, we were in a van. and we treated ourselves to burgers one day and it was just the raw mince. Like, it was just raw mince.
Raw, yeah.
We were like, sorry, can you send that back? And they were like,
please.
No. And you must speak French. I was like, okay, let's go back to the beans then. And our camper stove. But it's gas.
Anyway, one of the questions we ask people at the end of the podcast is your favourite death row meal. So if there was one kind of thing that you were going to eat right at the end, what would, and it can be one course, it can be a couple of courses, a three course.
Something I had recently was, and it was actually my husband got it and I ended up eating half his dinner.
Pork tureen.
I had a raw burger.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me a pound of mince there, I'll be grand. It was a slow braised beef short rib.
Yum.
In a red wine. Like, I'd say there were hours and hours, and just like caramelized, there was caramelized red onion in there, and it was just served with that gorgeous creamy mash and seasonal veg. Just gorgeous.
You weren't in the K Club, no?
No. There's one for your next menu.
Loads of it, yeah.
No,
we do, yeah.
So that would
I love
definitely.
A Jacob's Ladder, gorgeous.
And what about dessert? Or we'll have a piece of cheese.
Oh, God, no. I'd have to have something sweet. I love a good chocolate brownie. Because it's hard to get a good one. Sometimes they can be too gooey and sometimes they can be cake and you have to have
everyone,
the chocolate ganache.
People like, some people like them, but they're really gooey.
It is. And then lovely ganache and like homemade vanilla ice cream. I'd be delighted with that. Then you could do what you want with me. Off to the stocks you go.
Look, thanks so much for coming in. Pleasure.
Thank you for having
continued
me.
Continued success.
Oh, you're so good.
Great to meet you.
You too, guys.
Time for an Nespresso Professional break. Brought to you by Nespresso Professional. Effortless moments, exceptional coffee.
Time now for an Nespresso Professional break as we kick off this week's Dish of the Week. In this industry, the daily grind is very real and the coffee has to match the food. Nespresso Professional brings proper coffee excellence to wherever you work, from buzzing offices to luxury hotels, restaurants and leisure clubs. It's all about giving your team, customers and guests premium, consistent coffee that will leave a lasting impression. And we're delighted to have them supporting us. And up this week, it's Gareth. And I believe you're going Mexican in celebration of the rooftop reopening, Gaz, is it?
Yeah, and like you and I speak about this all the time, but probably we forget to talk about it when we're on here. But this year, I'm relaunching we've just reopened the rooftop at the hotel. And this year I've taken the inspiration for the menu from Mexico.
Mm.
So the Yucatan region of Mexico is a...
Settle down now.
No, exactly.
Settle yourself. Whatever you do, don't go Mexico City, Yucatan region.
Exactly.
Nowhere else.
So,
or you're doomed.
There's a very important word there, inspired. So anyway, I thought I knew a little bit about Mexican food, but turns out I know a lot less than I think. So the last three or
I'm
four
shocked.
Months,
you're from the arsehole of Donegal, exactly. and you're not well versed in Mexican.
But what is cool about our jobs, and I don't know whether every job has this, is that I had to go down and start thinking and researching about this whole new type of cuisine that I knew a little bit about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've obviously eaten a lot of Mexican restaurants and when you're on holidays and all that sort of traveling the States a bit, but. I was Lily Ramirez, who you know is a fellow Eurotalk member. Lily has a couple of shops here in Dublin, and I've been buying all the ingredients from her. So
Picado Mexicano, I
exactly.
Think it's called.
I'm actually buying the tortillas from her.
And she has a cookery school. Give her a shout out to that because she does some brilliant classes.
So that's
there.
Where we would have went. Myself and one of my sous chefs went up to see her, and we spoke about what we were thinking with the menu. And I flicked the menu on to her. She had a read of it. She came back and said,
think you should do this, and maybe that's not quite.
And it was wise to do that because she's very vocal when she sees some badass Mexican food going around. She loses her rag.
Yeah, but she really kept us between the ditches. But,
yeah,
you know, it's still my interpretation of a Mexican menu. I'm not a Mexican chef. But there's two little salsas that I'm making on the menu upstairs that are, I think, will lend well to home cookery, especially across the summer now when a lot of people are having barbecues. So the first one is a salsa roja. So it's like it's a roasted red salsa. And basically what you do is a cast iron pan, or you could even do it over a flame barbecue. You need 4 or 5 tomatoes, a couple of cloves of garlic, a couple of chilies. If you can get some jalapenos, leave them in the skin, a couple of peppers, and then you just roast them and char them really, really well. Like, you want the skins of tomatoes to go really black. And while they're still warm, so if you're not doing it over the barbecue, you're literally putting the raw ingredients into a pan and leaving them there. And the cast iron basically blisters all the skin. And then you just load all that into a blender. Blend it up with a little bit of olive oil, plenty of lime juice, fresh coriander, and season it well. It takes more salt than you will think.
Oh, yeah.
And you get this kind of...
I know, I love the sound of it already. It's very like the beginnings of a mole as well.
Yeah, exactly. But this is literally a salsa. The first time I ever had it was we were in Orlando a couple of years ago with the kids on holiday, and we were in a Mexican restaurant, and they brought chips out at the start with this roasted salsa, the salsa rojo. And I went and tried to figure out how to make it.
Is it blitzed then, did you say?
It's pureed.
Yeah, it's pureed.
So, you know the chopped tomato salsa that you think of, that's this real
pico de gallo, yeah.
That's that real bruy fresh. It's like that, but because you char the skin of everything, it gives it
a lot more
much deeper flavour. Lovely, and it's absolutely brilliant. If you're having friends,
what are you serving it with?
We serve chips and dips as one of the things when people sit down. So
when you say chips and dips, is it tortillas and
tortillas,
salsa?
Yeah. So that's one of the salsas. And then the other salsa that I found was a thing called salsa falsa. So it's a false salsa. It feels like there's avocado in it, but there's no avocado in it. So it's basically you boil a couple of courgettes, a white onion that you peel in some water, some whole cloves of garlic, and some coriander. You just put it all in water, bring it up to the boil raw in water, pinch of salt. You strain it off and you put this blanched garlic, courgette, onion into a blender, and then you blend it up with loads of fresh coriander, lime juice and olive oil.
Wow.
And it kind of thickens slightly.
Yeah.
And I made it for someone recently.
Like,
and
a boiled courgette sounds like the least appetizing thing I've ever heard of.
It feels like there's avocado in there. When the courgette blends up. Now, there's none of the water. You get rid of the water. And then you blend this up. Now, I mean, loads of lime juice, loads of fresh coriander. And you're left with this green, kind of watery looking guacamole. And I'm not making it sound nice, but I swear to God, it is delicious. And it's so simple to
make. I'm actually intrigued by that.
Make it.
Yeah, I will make it.
Yeah, so it's courgette, onion, garlic,
salsa falsa,
so false salsa.
Yeah,
and I do think it's a brilliant thing to try and make at home. This, if you're having friends,
deadly. So,
or
what else is on the menu up here? I want to hear more because I love the roof deck of the marker. I gotta say, anybody, by the way, that's going to the theatre, bored, gosh, that neck of the woods, or just in the city, going to the Point or the Three Arena. Roll upstairs in the marker on a hot summer's day or summer's evening. It has to be the
coolest. Book before you come.
Yeah, and it's one of the, honestly, hand in heart, it's one of the coolest venues in the city.
It's a really cool space, and last year we obviously done a big refurb up there, loads of new furniture, and last year I done Thai food, as you know, and this year we're doing Mexican. So we're some cracking drinks up there, like some really good spicy margs, and
I was going to say
loads of other drinks,
margaritas.
I'm doing some I'm a really nice tuna tostada up there, which is like, I'm buying the tortillas off Lily, which you fry them and they go crisp, and we have it with a smoked black garlic mayonnaise, fresh coriander. I'm doing a lamb birra, so it's a slow cooked shoulder lamb with all different types of chilies, and then we serve it in a little bread roll, and it's served with some pickled onion and some coriander. So it's kind of like a banh mi, you know, the Vietnamese banh mi, but it's a Mexican take on that. I'm doing a wagyu beef that we're cooking over flames, that we're serving with smoked onion mayonnaise and some roasted corn, which is really delicious dish. What else have I got up there? I've been doing a like a crispy chicken dish with a smoked barbecue salsa. So all the food really lends itself to
tearing into margarita.
Kind of. And you know the way I serve the food up there, it's all served in like a tapas style. So
yeah.
The idea is you come in, you order the food. As soon as we have it cooked, I have a Japanese grill in the kitchen, so we're grilling everything over flames.
Yeah.
So much flavour, to be fair.
Oh yeah, it's amazing cuisine.
And we have a dish with mole, but we're buying the mole from Lily because I tried to make it and I just couldn't get the flavour.
Well, her mole is, yeah.
Daniel, unbelievable.
We used to make one in Viewmount for a thing. We had a dish, a short rib actually. We had a short rib of beef and we had it with mole. Unbelievable, but honest to God, the length of time to make this thing, like, and well, then...
My number two, Sean, really took the lead. He's from Kerry, Sean. And he had a food truck during COVID and he was doing loads of Mexican cookery. So he really gets it. And him and Lily, you know, loads of conversations and we really got the food to just really high flavour. I'm really happy with it. So, and, you know, we had a lunch there a couple of weeks ago up on the roof, which I'm sure people would have seen on socials, and it got very well received. So that's the plan now across the summer. So
good man.
Come in and see us.
Best of luck this year with that. Thanks again to Nespresso Professional for supporting our Dish of the Week segment. To explore their coffee solutions for business, be sure to check out Nespresso Professional.
Now we move into one of our favourite parts of the show, Culinary Conundrums. Aoife, what have we got this week?
Firstly, I just want to say, since you've both done your lunches in the last few weeks, I need to come have the Dover sole and the Barton
grill. There you go.
And I need to eat those tuna tostadas.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Right up my street. They sound unreal. We have a message here from Julie. And just say thanks to everyone sending in messages to the email, food@goaloudnow.com. Keep them coming in because there's a good few in there now for us to get through over the next few weeks, which is great to see. Julie said, "Hi guys, love the podcast. I'm demented trying to cook salmon. I buy organic darns and no matter what method, temperature or duration of cooking, I get the white protein stuff forming on the fish. I recently saw a chef cook darns in the air fryer for 15 minutes, which I thought was a long time, but it looked perfect. My head is melted and I'm thinking of just throwing in the towel. Please help. Thanks again for the pod."
I mean, the first thing that springs to mind is why that she's bothered about the little specks of white protein, because it's part of cooking salmon. And cooking it at home, if you're being really precise, you just need to cook it at a lower temperature and that won't happen. But for home cookery, I mean, 15 minutes in an air fryer for a piece of salmon is too long.
Oh,
but if the skin is on and it was a big piece, the skin will cop most of the flack. Like 7 or 8 minutes will work for a piece of salmon in an
air
fryer.
I'm surprised that there's anything left after 15 minutes, actually.
Yeah, no, it'll be really overcooked. But we obviously cooked salmon a little bit under, so it's still a little bit opaque. You don't want it to cook all the way through, but I get that some people don't eat it like that. A really easy way to cook salmon is if you just put it into a little small bit of water that you've got, lemon, a bay leaf, a little bit of white wine vinegar, and a pinch of salt. And then if you just bring that mixture up to a boil and then you just drop a piece of salmon in and take it off the stove and leave it in there, let it cool in the water. That's a way to cold poach a piece of salmon. So when Gary and I 100 years ago were in college, we would have learned to cook a whole salmon and you cook it in like what I just said there and then you leave it in there and then when it cools in there, you lift it out and the vinegar that's in the blanc that you've made sets the protein in the fish. And it's a really old-fashioned, nice way to cook salmon. Obviously, you can pan fry it.
Then
you
would have skinned it.
Take the skin off.
And then you would have dipped cucumber and aspic, and
exactly.
you would have
yeah, everyone would remember the old fashioned, maybe you remember
you
the,
you would skeel
an old fashioned buffet used to put a whole dressed salmon, but that's how you used to cook it. But the little bits of white protein, don't stress over them. It's part of fish cookery.
Just get a little paper towel and tap
them, just wipe them off. Yeah, exactly
them. Yeah.
I can understand how visually you look at it and you might go, ugh.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with it.
Cooking a rasher or bacon, you know what I mean? It's the water, it's the salt and nitrates or whatever. Like it's that mixture trying to come out, you know what I mean? Like just tap it away.
If you were about now to cook a piece of salmon at home, what method are you using? Pan, oven?
I pan fried. Like if I was, I grew up eating wild salmon, you know what I mean? I was probably quite fortunate in that sense. Like we would have got wild salmon a good bit. A torchon, is it? Like you used to cut it right through the bone into steaks.
Darn is
so, well, a darn is whenever you fillet it and then you cut like a little piece, the traditional piece that you would see in stores. That's called a darn. But a torchon is whenever
Leave the spine and
inner guts taken out, and you slice a steak right through the spine bone. So there's a tiny little bit of bone, and then you'll have your two bits of the fillet, and the skin will be on. So it's already pre-scaled. You'd brush it with vegetable oil, heat a cast iron pan, and then season it with fine sea salt. You pass it through a little bit of flour, dust off the excess, pan fry it, and whenever it's like just around 3/4 full, 5 or 6 decent knobs of butter, and then the juice of half a lemon, drop it in, and then you're just basting for the last maybe 2 minutes or so, and let it settle, and then just eat that then with maybe a little lemon, a lemon crushed potato and some green beans or whatever way you want to eat it. But pan fried salmon is beautiful. And as Gareth said, like the minute he started chatting about salmon, I was thinking back to my Rosapenna hotel days, and we would have had like a big quart bouillon on a big...
That's more or less what I gave the recipe for.
Just the big poaching tray. You don't see poached salmon anymore. It would have been so popular back, and served that with maybe a little sauce douglaire or something traditional like that. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that person's overthinking things a little bit. Yeah. Chill out, relax.
Yeah, the driven demented. Like, yeah. I feel that. When something's not going
cut right, the cooking time in half, and that'll be a great start.
Yeah, great.
Okay, so that's it for another week. Thanks for tuning in. We're back next week with our culinary conundrums, our dishes of the week, and another great guest. If you can leave us a review or share with a friend, it really helps us meet more foodies. And apparently, I'm told now, if you hit follow, is also a really good idea. So if you are a fan of ours, please do hit follow. It helps us grow. And we'll chat to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. Take care.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.